While I was there, I saw the Iraqi soldiers come into the hospital with guns. They took the babies out of the incubators. Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
Okay, so that's a callback to the testimony of Nayira, whatever the fuck, the girl known as Nayira, in October 1990. She went before the Congressional Human Rights Caucus October the 10th, 1990. Talked about the Iraqi soldiers coming into Kuwaiti hospitals and tossing babies on the floor. And the entire story was bullshit. Everyone knows this. This is a matter of historical record. It is Halloween, October the 31st, 2019, so it's a good day for scary stories, and the story that Nayira was telling was a scary fucking story. A story of Iraqi soldiers tossing babies onto the floor. Those monsters, monstrous, monstrous, monstrous Hun. Did I say the Hun? Sounds like I was referencing the Tavistock Institute. How much do you guys know about the years preceding the U.S. involvement in World War I? If you think Nayira's testimony was original, you really need to go to the library and read some history books. If you look at all of the Tavistock propaganda between 1914 and 1917, and I think the key year is 1916, if you look at all that propaganda, it's all about the evil German soldiers killing babies, tossing babies out of their fucking beds, out of the fucking hospitals. This is the kind of bullshit that Woodrow Wilson, and yeah, liberal anti-war Democrats pushed on the American people to get us suckered into World War I. And just a little FYI. If the United States had not gotten involved in 1917, just about any historian I've ever come across with any degree of experience would tell you what I'm about to tell you. Every army on the Western Front, German, French, British, you name it, every army was a hair's breadth away from revolt in 1917. They weren't doubling down for revenge. They weren't wishing and hoping to kill the other guy. Every army on the Western Front was very, very close to revolt, which means they were going to turn their cannons the other direction. German, British, French, etc. Kind of like what the Russians were already doing. By 1917, that's essentially what the Russians did. I mean, and at least certainly by 1918. So yeah, by the time you get through to 1918, more or less, the war between the Germans and the Russians is over. And pretty much the only battlefront left is the Western Front. Now, I'm not defending the Germans, folks. I'm not saying they were the good guys. Folks, World War I, I'm not World War II, because a lot of people get this confused. World War I had no good guys. There were no heroes. It was not a heroic cause. It was literally one of the worst avoidable human disasters I can imagine. It set up Europe for 100 years of bullshit, and frankly, the bullshit that still echoes, not just from World War I, but the terrible treaties and ridiculous nations created after World War I, like our good friend no longer exists, Yugoslavia. That country was invented after World War I. It lasted a minute. We are still living with the fucking debris of World War I to this fucking day. That is how big of a human disaster that was. And folks, if the United States had simply stayed out of that fucking war, there's a very good chance that would have been the last world war. There's a very good chance that every oligarchic power in Europe would have been toppled in 1917. And I don't mean communist revolution. I mean good old-fashioned liberty. Imagine a free world. Imagine a free country. Imagine if the troops, the French, the British, the Germans, turned their guns on their own officers, on their own fucking rulers. Do you really think they were going to choose communism? No, they were going to choose freedom. The thing is, though, they cannot be allowed to be free. That's kind of what was happening. If we really want to break things down, the thing that probably scared every oligarchic power in Europe in 1914 was this simple fact. Humans were advancing. They did not need to reproduce like rabbits, although eventually that got back on track. They didn't need to reproduce like rabbits. They were advancing. Technology was progressing. Human society was improving. Overall, in 1914, the world was doing pretty fucking well. That could not be allowed. Ordinary people were gaining power over their lives. That could not be allowed. Institutions like the Federal Reserve were created to make sure that would not happen. Today is Halloween, October the 31st, 2019, a day for scary stories. Stories about monsters. Stories about beasts. Stories about ghosts that arise from the darkness of our own failure as human beings. FYI, I'm going to try to get a little less lazy in the coming weeks. Assuming I make it past 11:03, let's bring up our little list of topics here. Yeah. First topic is about this whole fucking Baghdadi is dead. Baghdadi. Doesn't that sound like the name of a hip-hop star? Baghdadi, the king of ISIS, the king of an Israeli CIA creation, the king of ISIS. ISIS came out of nowhere like a rock band, born in some cave in Great Britain, driving brand new Toyota pickups with fucking mounted 50 cals, and that's M2's brother, with all kinds of AR-15s and AR-17s and really nice looking NATO chambered 5.56 weapons is what I'm saying. Yeah, back in 2014, ISIS just came out of nowhere. Magical fucking terrorist group. Because, you know, Al-Qaeda was now our allies in Syria. So how could they be our enemies any longer? Unless we have to reuse them again. Kind of like Saddam Hussein, right? He was our friend once, and then he wasn't a minute later. Like the Kurds, we once gave Saddam Hussein chemical weapons, knowing he was going to kill Kurds, and then we were the saviors of the Kurds, and now we're not. That's kind of like the reality of these scary stories. Anyways, I don't know what to tell you about this Baghdadi thing. The whole thing is bullshit. ISIS is bullshit. The fact that it still exists means there are people they don't know how to liquidate. You have to understand something, folks. The CIA does not like expensive witnesses. It's not, okay, yes, it's true. The Federal Reserve can print a lot of money, but they can't print that much money, at least not today. So it is true that the pockets are quite deep as far as the deep state goes, but there are limits. And if you've got an army of 10 or 20,000 crazy jihadis that you manufactured in 2014, and they all expect to get paid, you got some fucking difficult choices to make. So yeah, Baghdadi is dead, and there's a new Baghdadi now. And I gotta say, it seems like the CIA and Israel have a lot in common with the worst fucking hooker you can imagine. worst fucking hooker you can imagine has super crabs. I don't mean normal crabs. I mean the kind of crabs that you have to go to Dr. Grunkus on a Thursday at midnight. In the darkness of night, Dr. Grunkus will meet you as he will meet all of his fucking patients. You have to have him pour whatever mixture of acid, battery acid, chlorine, or whatever half-ass hobo shit he mixes together in really, really quite dirty conditions in that fucking alley. That is what the CIA and Israel remind me of. And I say the CIA and Israel because when it comes to the Middle East, those are the two institutions working hand in hand to sow as much fucking chaos as possible. Do they run things, folks? I don't know who the fuck runs things. I'm fairly certain that if you see the face of somebody on TV, they don't run things. I'm sorry for fucking breaking your notion of the world. But if you see somebody's face on television, there's a very good chance they have no power whatsoever. And I'm not saying the people that control the world are hidden. What I'm saying is that they're obscured. In fact, it is quite literally part of being in the occult. To be hidden. That's what the occult means. And if you're wondering why I'm going to the piano type vibe with the keyboard now, if I didn't already say it, I'll say it again. I gotta work on this. I gotta learn this thing right. I gotta start doing this right. You know, and I don't know. It's like I'm talking about the laziness. It's got to go away. If I survive 11-3, right? Anyways, all I got to say about ISIS is that they are the worst case of super crabs ever. Okay, the worst case of crabs. I've never had the crabs, thank fucking God. But I can imagine the crabs suck worse than the fucking lice, and the lice has to suck. That's what I think of the fucking CIA in Israel. They are the worst fucking hookers on planet Earth. I don't know who their pimp is, but my God, do they produce the worst fucking crabs you can imagine. You remember Osama bin Laden? He was a case of the crabs we tried to give the Soviet Union. Oh, fuck. You see how that shit cycles back on us? The fucking crabs. Next topic. And it's also a scary story. I think today's a day for scary stories on the Little Saigon Report. Later on, I'll be going to Des Moines, Washington, to hang out with my sister and her daughter and talk about ghosts. In October of 2017, I was in Ohio. To be precise, Dayton. I was hanging out with some people, participating in some stuff. Actually, the people I met that year were relatively just good people for the most part. I've talked about this before. 2017 was the year I should have stayed in the cave. Like, right now, I'm kind of in the cave. And when I'm in the cave, I don't harm anybody. I'm not likely to say anything. It's not like I threaten people physically, but there's a chance that if I'm wandering about when I should be in the cave, that I'll say something that I'm going to regret. And worst case scenario, I might say really terrible shit. And usually, my cannon of ire is pointed at people that deserve it. So usually, even when I lose it, at least I lose it in the direction of evil. Kind of like with the fucking toucher at Alaska Airways. That fucker deserved it. I don't know if he cared, and I don't even know if it bothered him, but he sure as shit fucking deserved it. So yeah, I went a little crazy, but my God, did the target fucking deserve it. In October 2017, specifically on this date 2 years ago, I went completely nuts. I went completely crazy. I said some of the meanest things I've ever said. And I was in one of the most deluded states of mind I'd ever been in. I understand, I think, today why it happened, but I'm not really sure if I can really forgive myself for it. And I don't even want to talk to the people I said those things to. I know this is really vague. The reason why it's vague is that part of it is protecting people who have a right to their fucking privacy. But interestingly enough, prior to Halloween 2017, a couple weeks earlier, before I started binging on LSD, yeah, I will never do LSD again, folks. I do not recommend LSD. I kind of like shrooms. And you know that I smoke the doob. And I've been known to drink a beer or two. Just one or two. Just one or two beers. Yeah, I did a lot of acid in October 2017. I will not blame the drug for how I acted. That was a choice. But I will tell you something. LSD, I totally get why the CIA has a hard-on for LSD. Once you've done it a few times, you get it. It is the perfect fucking drug for the deep state. Anywho, that being said, a few weeks before even the LSD, I had this dream. I had this dream, and I want to call it a dream. It was really a nightmare, but I had this dream that I was hanging out with these folks in Dayton, and I looked out the window of where we were hanging out, and a nuclear explosion went off, a bomb went off. And I think I remember relaying this dream to some folks. So it was sort of one of those cases where at least a few people probably remember me saying this. And it was kind of ridiculous because, like, what? You're saying a nuke's going to go off in Dayton? Who gives a fuck about, you know, Dayton? Exactly. Now, me personally, looking back, I think my subconscious was telling me something. I think it was saying, Dan, if you don't get your shit together, you're about to lose it. That, I think, is the true meaning of that dream. In retrospect, I just did not fucking understand it, nor did I have anybody nearby who was, I don't know, together enough to even give a shit. Fact is, most of the people I met in 2017 were in desperate situations, more desperate than any situation I'd ever been in. In fact, most of the people I met one-on-one in 2017 were like a lot of anarchists in America. Misfits, on the run, undercover, doing the best they can. That's what we do as anarchists in the United States of America. We actually remind Americans about liberty. This really pisses off Americans. And we're not too keen on all these fucking wars where we go around blowing up people. This also pisses off most Americans, especially in Seattle. Seattle is a warfare town. No matter what bullshit the average lib-prog Democrat voter in Seattle will say, they do not know a war they do not love. They love the wars, especially if you can convince them it's for some social justice warrior cause. Like, you say things like, oh, Putin is homophobic. The Russians hate gay people. That sounds a lot like Nasser Yara and the Tavistock Institute. But that's my point, folks. That's Seattle, anyways. Now, why am I talking about this weird dream and me being an asshole 2 years ago? And when I say asshole, I mean super gigantic asshole. Well, the reason why I'm mentioning this is because I have been listening to these videos from this weird, crazy German. I will include a link in the description zone of this podcast. And even if everything he says is total bullshit, which I'm kind of hoping it is because I live in Seattle, I will probably, maybe I'll be at church when this happens, but Des Moines is still just south of Seattle. So basically, if this hits Seattle and it's as big as he thinks it's going to be, then maybe even Des Moines, Washington won't be so fucking safe, or I should say rather Burien on 11-3. I got family here. If I actually thought this was really going to happen, I would probably tell people I think this is really going to happen, but I don't know if I would leave. Because I kind of think a lot of people I know wouldn't leave. They wouldn't believe it. This goes back to that thing about great lies. The reason why, and this is, you guys got to listen to this, because some of you may hear this next week or 2 weeks from now, assuming it doesn't get deleted. And you'll say, these were the last words of Dan Sullivan. These were the last words of Dan before he was vaporized by the directed energy weapon from the sky. These were the last words of testimony about the coming apocalypse. Yeah, okay. Maybe. But here's the thing. If it happens, it still doesn't fucking matter because they don't need to delete shit. I'm going to say this, and this will become one of those rules of history that everyone will forget. So I'll say it, and you'll forget it. You'll forget it by next week. Not all of you, but some of you. Maybe even most of you. Especially if you have friends and family in Seattle, and especially if something happens. The greatest lies in human history work because no one wants to believe the truth. No one would want to believe our own government would kill people. I mean, we know that it does. We know that it does. We know that little Nazi-Yara was a fucking liar. We know that our government killed hundreds of thousands of Native Americans, maybe perhaps millions in the 19th century. This is a matter of historical record. Ask any chief. He'll tell you. Our country has a history of killing, and yet we try to tell ourselves it doesn't, because we're always fighting for the good side. I tell you this right now. If something does happen on November the 3rd, if there is a false flag, most of the people in the United States will believe whatever story the government tells them. Not because it's true, and not even because on an unconscious level they really believe, but because subconsciously, in their consciousness and their awareness, they could not allow themselves to believe that our government would do this. It is that horrible. In a sense, that is the most powerful way to lie. It really is. It sounds creepy and scary, but it's true. It's probably why serial killers are so successful. The most powerful way to lie, the most destructively powerful way to tell a lie, is by doing something that no one could ever believe you would do. Ever. He was so nice. Everybody loved him. He was such a good guy. She was such a great girl. Oh, sure, she was a nurse. She always tried to help the old people, but then the old people started dying. Like I said, it's Halloween. This crazy-ass German guy is convinced that it won't actually be a real nuke. It'll be some type of a heat weapon vaporizing Seattle sometime on November the 3rd. They'll make it look like the Russians launch some type of an attack. He does not believe the powers that be want a full-blown nuclear war, although, frankly speaking, I don't see how you avoid something like a limited nuclear war at that point. I know you all have heard my own conversation of the clathrate gun in the past. What is the clathrate gun? Is the clathrate gun another scary story for Halloween? And again, I hope it's a story. Although, frankly, if you believe in the current theories concerning the Earth as far as Earth's natural history is concerned, this theory has a lot of basis. Around the Arctic Circle, for a number of reasons, not the least of which, a lot of organic matter was trapped during the transitional period of the last ice age. So basically, or I should say before the last ice age occurred. So when the last ice age occurred, it trapped a lot of organic material. And even though it receded, the Earth's air conditioner, which is sometimes what some people would call the Arctic Ocean, the Earth's air conditioner basically kept a lot of this organic material in stasis, which means it didn't decay, it was just frozen. And that's what permafrost means, folks. When people say permafrost, they should also say, if you don't understand what they're saying, permanently frozen. Well, the problem is, if you believe the reports, the Arctic Circle and the regions we would call the permafrost are melting. And they're melting not just at the surface, but they're also melting underneath the water, which is to say that the pressure-temperature differential that keeps methane, for example, frozen methane, relatively stable under the Arctic Ocean, that pressure-temperature differential is changing. And now you're beginning to get fountains of methane, lots and lots of methane boiling off into the atmosphere. And that's methane that is simply converting from a frozen state to a gaseous state. When you include all of the organic matter around the Arctic Circle, plus the frozen methane, what you have is sometimes referred to as the clathrate gun. And the clathrate gun is essentially a positive feedback loop of methane heating the atmosphere, releasing more methane. And again, that's how it works. Over a 10-year period, methane is 100 times more of a greenhouse gas and CO2. Now, why is that important? Because the clathrate gun doesn't kill you in 100 years. If this theory is real, it kills you in about 10 years. And to tell you the truth, folks, when it comes to things like little Greta Thunberg, for example, you know, little Greta, the witch hunter who told us that all life is about to end, or AOC Cortez, who says we have 10 years left, these are foolish people saying foolish shit. They're saying a lot of bullshit. And this is the thing, folks. The reason why powers love foolish people saying foolish shit is because it takes serious issues and makes it seem ridiculous. So whatever you want to say about climate change, here's the bottom line. Whatever is distorting the permafrost in the Arctic Circle, I don't care if it's pole shift, I don't give a fuck what it is. Whatever is disturbing that runs the risk of releasing massive amounts of methane over a short period of time. And there's more or less nothing we can do about it, except for maybe cook it off. And this is one of the theories about, you know, HARP and a lot of these big antenna arrays, is that they're designed to cook off methane, to basically break it down in the upper atmosphere, which also destroys ozone, which also means you have to dump more gumbus out of the sky to keep people from basically being cooked. Yeah. I don't know, folks. I don't know if this German is right on November the 3rd, okay? I just don't know. I just don't know. Next topic. This is a story that I heard about from a taxi driver. I was in a taxi a few weeks ago, riding around the city, riding around this rainy, nasty city, riding around with a taxi driver in the rain, riding around this nasty city looking for action. My driver, his name was Sanjay was a Sikh. I didn't know what he was seeking. Maybe Sanjay was seeking solace in the emptiness of the night. But I was fucking passenger. There'd be no solace with Dan in the fucking car. Sanjay pulls the car over and starts crying. He starts crying, and I ask him, "What's up, man? What's the deal?" Sanjay looks at me and he says, "Listen, sir, I come from a land of pain. I come from India. Sir, don't ask me about my troubles. I come from a land of a kind of infinite pain. My troubles are disturbing, sir. Don't ask me about them. I come from India. Well, I thought to myself that if at least I talked to my taxi driver, I might get home. So I said, Sanjay, sir, I ask. I plead to you as a Christian to a, I don't know, are you a fucking Hindu? And he said, no, I'm a Sikh. And I said, what are you seeking? Ha, ha, ha. And that got a dirty look. I said, Sanjay, tell me the truth. What's going on? And he looks at me. He says, Sir, my brother is dead. Sir, I'm going to tell you a story of sadness that only a man from India can tell. A story of those ancient trials that drove Buddha mad, that sent the Osho running for the hills. I'm going to tell you the story. My brother was a student at the University of Washington. He was actually a really bright student. He was getting straight A's. Our whole family was quite proud. He was studying computer science. He was going to be an engineer at Microsoft. It was so wonderful, sir. He had a scholarship. He won awards, and then he started smoking cigarettes. You see, my brother, he's such a fine boy. Such a fine boy. His name is Javin. And Javin started smoking cigarettes just to get by in school. Just to deal with tests, studying, late at night, crazy, smoking cigarettes. So I thought, dear sir, the cigarettes are bad for him. So I bought him a Juul pod. So I tell you, sir, I bought him a Juul pod for his birthday. I said, Javin, I am your brother. I am so proud of you. I want you to stop smoking those nasty American Spirit style, freshly made Native American style, no preservative cigarettes. And instead, you know, here's a Juul pod. That's what I said, sir. Here's a Juul pod. Smoke this. My nephew started smoking the Juul vaporizing cigarette. He used to just vape one pod a day. Then within a month, he was up to 3 pods a day. Then he was simply going through pods about every hour. He stopped sleeping. I went over to his place, sir, about 2 weeks ago. I hadn't heard from him in days. He given me a key to his apartment in the U District. The door was locked. It looked like there was Amazon boxes piled up in front of his door. Books and video games. Sir, I opened the door and there was this horrible smell. It was a smell of beer and stale pizza. But there was something else. It was the smell of feces and urine, sir, and vomit. The wildest smell you can imagine, even if you own 50 French bulldogs, but there was something else. Sir, I went into my brother's bedroom, and on the bed, his entire chest was opened, as if his insides had blown out. There was blood and flesh all over the walls. There was bits of internal organs stuck to the ceiling. This other smell, sir. Did I tell you I'm from India? Did I tell you my people know the infinite pain? And he looked at me. He looked in my eyes. Sanjay looked in my eyes. On that stormy Seattle night, he looked at me and he said, "Sir, it was the smell of popcorn. If they tell you that these jewel pods will give you popcorn lungs, they're not lying." They're telling you the truth. They're telling you the truth because something weird happens inside the lungs when you vape those goddamn jewel pods. They turn you, the inside your bronchi into little fucking kernels of popcorn. And because the jewel pod people use old movie house butter as their basis for their vaping juice, part of the conspiracy. When that old movie-style popcorn with all the triglycerides mixes with the mucus of your lungs, your bronchi begin to pop. And if you vape too much, they all start to pop at once. Your lungs fill up like Jiffy Pop popcorn. So I don't know what to tell you folks about the jewel pod. I will say this. This story I just told you, there's more to it. Once the taxi driver got finished telling me the story, he began pulling away and he told me a little bit more about his brother. He said, "My brother, he loved many things in this life, but he really loved his electric bike. I went to pack up all of his stuff, but the one thing that was missing from his home was his electric bike. My wife yesterday said, 'I saw your brother on his electric bike.' But my brother is dead. He's buried, sir. My brother is gone. But where is his bike?" Sanjay started the taxi driver, taxi car again. He started his car. We started driving away. He was going to take me home now after I listened to his very sad story. But then there was this look on his face as we were driving down Yesler. This look on his face as he looked back behind him. Crazy eyes. Sanjay had crazy eyes. He said, "Sir, can you look behind you?" So I turned around. And I saw this kid in his 20s. Strange looking kid riding an electric bike. The max speed for most electric bikes, I think, is like, what, 15 miles an hour? Maybe 20? Sanjay was sweating. His eyes were moving crazy. He started moving the wheel of the taxi in a feverish, crazy way. The vehicle started to just go across the road. It was late at night. Maybe we were going to get pulled over. I was hoping we would. Something had to stop this. But that fucking guy on that fucking electric bike, we were going 45 miles an hour down Aurora, and it was still chasing us into the night. All the way past 120th. All the way past the Hooker Garage. All the way back to my place. Some crazy dude on an electric bike was chasing us. When we pulled up, the biker stopped about half a mile behind. Sanjay let me out. I took the money and I crumpled it up and I threw it at his fucking face. I swore to Sanjay, "Why did you bring the demons of Mumbai into my home?" And he said, "Why did you hire a taxi driver not realizing that you were in fact asking for it?" And I basically had no response. Because Sanjay was right. You take a taxi someplace in Seattle, or anywhere, you don't know what demons you're inviting into your home. Anyways, I don't know the deal with the jewel pods. I don't know if you're going to die if you use the jewel pod or not. You might die. I'm not really sure. It's entirely plausible that if you use a jewel pod vaporizer or cigarette technology, that all of your lungs will almost instantly convert to popcorn. And like Javin, or Javin, or whatever the fuck his name is, the fucking computer science student from India, your lungs might explode, and then you might become a ghost who haunts his brother who drives a taxi in the middle of the night. Next topic. So, a few podcasts ago, a listener slash friend of mine, we did a podcast together. His name is AJ, and we talked about this idea of the abstract dam, meaning an abstraction of the hydroelectric dam. Like, could you create something that worked the same way, but maybe didn't even need water? And simply put, you can. It's really a question of how you manage it, but you can. It's a mechanical process. It's essentially a process of raising a weight. If I take a weight, let's say 100 pounds, and I raise it, let's say 100 feet off the Earth's surface, it gains something called potential energy. Now, it's not actual energy until you let it go. Then it begins accelerating, and when it hits the ground, it releases that energy, and that is the actual kinetic energy. That is the released energy. All this is measurable. I'm not going to go into the math because right now I don't see the point. But all of this is basically first year calculus and physics. All of this can be worked out on a napkin, more or less. One of the ideas I had today was for camping gear, and I call it the tidal seesaw. But let's say you enjoy camping near the ocean. Well, the tidal seesaw would be a kit, and the kit would be designed to be lightweight. The idea behind the kit is to create an anchored seesaw with essentially a big lever, and the lever has a float on the end of it, and the float goes out into the water. So basically, when the tide goes down, again, you have to have something extensible here. It needs to be probably pretty long. But when the tide goes down, the lever goes down. As the tide goes up, the lever is pushed up, and that does work. And the thing is, because your other point of pressure is literally the ocean in this case, there's really no limit to how much work can be done except for how much of the shit you want to pack with you. Like, let's say you want to design this so that people could pack it into the fucking, you know, into the wilderness. On the other end of the lever is a device for raising essentially a bag of water. And the bag of water could be designed to carry maybe even up to 50 pounds of water, 100 pounds of water, who knows. And you could put a pulley around a limb of a tree, maybe that's the best solution, is find yourself a fucking tree and hang a pulley off of it. That limb, depending on how high it is off the ground, represents your point of potential energy. So maybe you want to pick a limb really high up in a tree. The idea is that this device, theoretically, could raise the fucking weight, and then as the weight goes down, and you could call this discharge, it could be hooked up to a gearbox, hooked up to a little electric motor, and you're generating electricity. Now again, I'm not sure this is feasible as a backpack kit, but the idea of a tidal seesaw, a big, like, imagine you built something huge, like a big seesaw, something anchored, it would have to be heavily anchored, but something heavily anchored with a huge arm that goes out into the water. Now again, you'd want to pick a spot where you have a pretty good tide differential between high tide and low tide. You'd want something with a big swing because that's just going to give you more power. But essentially more power, yeah. And what you're going to do is you're going to use the energy produced, or rather the work produced by this lever going up and down, to actually put, basically to raise weights, a lot like the potential energy battery we've talked about. So you could have essentially two towers, or two wells, but probably two towers, tower A, tower B. Each one has, let's say, a 2,000 pound or a 3,000 pound weight, and this larger scale seesaw could be raising one while the other's discharging. And the idea is to design this so that in theory, it could be a continuous system almost. Like, while one particular cylinder is discharging over, let's say, a 12 or 24 hour period, the other weight is being raised by, again, this big seesaw. Again, I don't know exactly how much work you're going to get out of it, so all this needs to be calculated. But I don't see a limit. And the great thing about this is a relatively simple machine. I mean, the thing about simple machines are easy to fabricate. Okay, they are. I know that that sounds like almost a tautology or a circular statement, but the fact is, fabrication is everything, I think, in the times to come. No matter what the future looks like, the efficiency of fabrication is important, and it needs to be possible to fabricate parts nearby, which means if you're going to build a way to store lots of excess energy from something like solar or like hydro, you know, like solar or like wind or any of these other potential sources of ambient energy, if you're going to want to store this, you're going to want a form of storage that is relatively easy to create and, frankly, keeps this energy. Okay? If you store stuff in a battery, batteries will lose their charge, even if they're not being drained. But basically, if I'm raising a huge weight 100 feet in the air and it's in a locked position, explain to me how that loses its charge, other than the structure itself collapsing, which, again, nothing lasts forever. So if your basic contention would be, well, Dan, that giant structure will fall in 200 years, okay. But if we make the last 200 years and it can be fixed, then it seems to me it doesn't fucking matter. if it's a simple machine, it can not only be fixed, it can be reproduced. It can be created by somebody else. That's why I like the title Seesaw, because it can use basic concepts of ratcheting and levering to raise a weight, but the weight itself could be quite fucking large. I mean, it could be a huge weight. Again, it depends upon the scale of the seesaw. And, you know, also, you have to be able to do this, which means that you have to have enough rights over your property as a property owner on the ocean to be able to set up the fucking seesaw. And I truly don't know, because these days, if you have something going 5 feet away from the fucking beach, somebody's going to fucking sue you. Now, the interesting twist on this is that this type of technology is not only simple to fabricate, but it is less damaging to the environment because there is less shit being moved around, there is less shit being mined. You could use garbage from the fucking wreckage yard to build something like this, to make it work at a certain basic scale. So even though you'd probably have your entire homeowners association wanting your head, in reality, this is one of the most environmentally friendly batteries or energy storage devices I can imagine. And unlike the fucking real dam, where you're always going to have evaporation, there is no real loss of charge here, okay, unless the structure itself collapses. Well, you build it so it doesn't. You build it strong. Again, this is not terribly complicated physics. This is the kind of physics where you can do the math yourself on a piece of paper, and then you just improve the tolerances so shit lasts. And you know what, folks? Given that we're going to be reusing potentially a lot of crap, a lot of scrap metal, we have to think about tolerances. We can't be imagining the tolerances of Toyota Motor Corporation. No, that's not reality. Our tolerances need to be different for a world where we don't have the same high tech available. Anyways, the tidal seesaw, I'm going to try to do a diagram of it and include it as a link maybe in this podcast, maybe not today, but in the future. Anywho, this hour of the Little Saigon Report is brought to you by Crazy Jerry's Hobo Dope Ass Vapes and Vape Pins and Vape Technology of Little Saigon. Crazy Jerry's Hobo Dope Ass Vapes has been around since 2010. They have had the best dope ass vapes of any vapes. At Crazy Jerry's, you can get any type of vape pen you want. Our vape juice is specially made. We make vape juice from organic compounds. At Crazy Jerry's, our hobo dope-ass vapes are cheap. If you're on a budget, if you're homeless and wandering the streets, at Crazy Jerry's hobo dope-ass vapes, we don't judge you, baby. We can sell you a vape pod for 50 cents. It might not kill you. It might not make you feel better. It might not change your life. But I can promise you this. If you come to Crazy Jerry's Hobo Dope Ass Vapes, you're never gonna pay more than you have to. But you're always gonna pay. Next topic. Thank you, Crazy Jerry. You know, I love going to Crazy Jerry's dope-ass vapes. When I first moved to this neighborhood, I didn't know a lot of people except for this hooker named Mary. Wow. That's funny. Anyways, I shouldn't have picked that name because every once in a while I'll pick a name and I'll think, I picked a name of somebody I know. Someone's going to get the wrong idea. No, the hooker's name was Tangerine Tangerine Misty. Tangerine Misty, the hooker of Little Saigon. She took me to Crazy Jerry's hobo dope-ass vapes. Tangerine Misty. I don't know what happened to her. So many people go missing in Little Saigon now. Some people think it's the rat garden. Some people think it's the Gronkus Lords. But if you need a crazy ass, dope ass vape, if you need the kind of vape pen where you know that every vape you take is might be your last, come to Crazy Jerry's. They got all kinds of deals. Next topic about Donald Trump yelling at Powell. Powell, Powell, Powell. Have you guys noticed this little... There are a lot of little dramas going on right now. There's the Hillary Tulsi Gabbard drama. Tulsi, you're a Russian agent. And then there's this Trump Powell. And if you don't know, Chairman Powell, Jerome Powell, is the chairman of the Federal Reserve. And yes, they did lower rates. They had to lower rates. Because we're in a recovery still. Did you notice how excited they were about the GDP print of 1.9%? Sub 2%. As I said, folks, before, since the great financial crisis, the entire world economy, and you can include fucking China in this, because their numbers get smeared out if you do this the right way. If you do the math the right way, the entire world economy, okay, despite little spikes, despite the little Chinese commodity spike of 2012 through 2016, the entire world economy has averaged under 2% GDP growth since 2008 for the last 10 years. The whole fucking thing. In that period of time, we have probably printed at least that amount between all the central banks in money out of nowhere, which means that if you want to, you can wipe away that whole 2% and say it never happened, and probably more than that, because then you got private debt and public government debt, and my gosh, let's not talk about unfunded liabilities, like who's going to pay for shit in 10 years. Oh, the millennials are all broke. And I'm X-Gen, and I can tell you something, I'm broke as fuck. So who's going to pay for this shit you guys are imagining in the future? Well, it's Powell. Anyways, Trump is upset with Jerome because Jerome won't print. And the reason why I think this is funny, it's because there were a lot of quote-unquote woke alt people back in 2016. And one of their reasons for wanting to support Trump was it was going to lead to an honest Fed. Really? Printing lots of money is honesty? Making up money that doesn't exist and loaning it to the richest and most corrupt people that have ever existed is your definition of honest and true? Trump is asking, this is what Trump is asking for, okay? He is asking Jerome Powell to debase the U.S. currency because he wants our currency to be cheaper than the Chinese yuan. Now, that's entirely possible. It is possible to do that. It is not possible to do that without creating inflation. Side note, I went to buy bacon today. And yeah, I know about the great protein pork crisis, but there's more going on than that, folks. I went to buy bacon today. I got the cheapest kind. It was twice as much as what it was, I think, 2 weeks ago. Now, of course, that's a blip. It's a blip. There's no inflation. They tell us there's no inflation. I spent $40 at the grocery store today. It bought a couple things. It bought me some potatoes and onions. It bought me some food. But do I truly think that the $40 I spent today is even remotely close to what I would have gotten 10 years ago for $40? No. And if I compare it to $40 my mom would have spent back in the 70s, I kind of think she would have bought enough food for all 8 kids and her logger husband to last probably almost a fucking month on that $40. maybe not that long, but certainly long enough. I don't know. Trump wants Powell to print, print, print. And yet so many woke people in the alt-right world claim that he was going to rein in the Fed. The Fed loves to do this shit. The Fed wants to crash the US dollar, okay? Or maybe there's another agenda, but there is certainly nothing that the Fed wouldn't love to do more than just make up a lot of money to give away to their friends. The main reason Jerome Powell is even pushing back on this is it's part of the theater. It's like Caesar, you know, Caesar has to refuse the crown at least three times before he accepts it. Once, twice, and then three times, and okay, okay, I will be dictator of Rome. But you gotta ask me three fucking times. And that's kind of how I see the Powell situation. This is a lot of fucking theater. Powell and Trump know the deal. Whatever happens next has been planned. This little theater is not designed for them, it's designed for you, buddy. And that, I think, will be it for this podcast on Halloween. We have a podcast coming later. We will be hanging out in Little Saigon. I'm going to do a little different work with my H4N Pro this time. I'm not going to set up the additional mics. I think that turned out to be a disaster. I really do regret that. I'm simply going to use the omnidirectional mics on the Zoom because they actually are pretty fucking rad. Unlike my keyboard playing, which is terrible. Before I go, I will add this little point. I am currently between contracts. What does that mean? It means that even though my basic expenses are more or less covered for the next 6 months, at some point in the next 6 months, I'll have to go back and work another software contract, which I'm not looking for sympathy. I am not looking for sympathy. But if I can convince enough people to donate to my podcast, and if I can get to the magical number of $1,500 a month, believe it or not, I can stretch that shit. I can live off that shit, at least until Judgment Day, which might be November the 3rd. So if you like my podcast, and I'm not saying you do, but if you like my podcast, and I'm not saying that's true, then feel free to click on the Venmo link on my SoundCloud homepage, or, and it says donate there on the right-hand panel, or click on the link that I'm going to include in this SoundCloud podcast post. It'll be the last item. If you have the money, if there is no one else in your life that needs it more than I do, and frankly, if it's a brother, a sister, a mom, a dad, any relative or friend, and they need help, they need it more than I do. But if you literally have money, and you've helped everyone you need to help, and you've helped yourself, and you have taken care of what you need to take care of, and you actually have extra cash, and you enjoy my podcast, I know that's a very small set of individuals, then feel free to donate. Donate as much as you want to. This is not a revolving thing. You don't have to donate every fucking month. You could donate once a year. You could donate once in a lifetime. If you're rich, if you're super rich, you could donate enough to buy me a fucking Winnebago. Then I could travel the country in search of hookers. I'm going to let you guys go. And you might hear a podcast later, and a subject later will be ghosts. We're going to talk about ghosts and probably beans. Beans, the French bulldog, and ghosts. And these topics are connected because beans is a vessel for demons, as all French bulldogs are. I wonder what Beans is up to now. So until later, adieu.